We're working in Romans. When we were in Romans 6, talking about the issue of sin, of sinning, we read, "Sin shall not be master over you, for you are not under the law, but under grace." The last couple of weeks, we've talked about why, when you're under the law, sin masters you. That almost seems counterintuitive, but we talked about why, when you're under the law, sin masters us. We saw that the problem is not the law. Rather, the problem is the flesh that the law is joined to. That the flesh is too weak. That the flesh is too sold into sin. And even when you desire, even when you hope to do the right thing, the flesh keeps missing the mark, keeps falling short. So how do we get out of the mess that the flesh constantly lands us in? O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the body of the sin? How do we get out of the mess that the flesh lands us in, even with God's law directing us? Our flesh just gets controlled by sin. Today, what I want us to do is to think about just the amazing possibility that these verses point to. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. And out of Romans, if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. These verses suggest that by the Spirit, the waywardness of the flesh can be overcome. The waywardness of the flesh was not overcome by the law. But these verses seem to hold out an exciting possibility that the Spirit can somehow curb and the waywardness of the flesh. That if the flesh is causing you to miss the mark, if the flesh is causing you to sin, then you just need to walk by the Spirit, and you will not fulfill the desires of the flesh. If the flesh is causing you to sin, you just need by the Spirit to overcome the flesh, and you will live. That sounds promising, doesn't it? But how exactly does one do Spirit stuff? How does one walk by the Spirit? How do you, by the Spirit, put to death the deeds of the body? How do you do that? Sounds promising. But how do you actually do that? You know, how do you do that Spirit stuff? It's like you've been out fishing. You haven't been catching anything. You've been doing it for a long time. And I say to you, all you need to do is run divers on the outside on superline. Make sure you put a snubber before the leader. And I'm telling you, you'll catch fish. That's all you need to do. I know you haven't been catching any, but all you need to do is run divers on the outside on superline and put snubbers in front of your leader, and you'll go. You go, okay, great. You know, and then you go, what's a diver? And what's that superline stuff? And whoever heard of a snubber? What's a snubber anyway? So it sounds so promising, but how do you do it? Walking by the Spirit is the key. So how do we do the key? That's the topic for today. And first, now I want to back up a little bit, and we'll come back to these verses again. In Romans 7, we find the law and the flesh together. The law is given by God, reveals the will of God. The law is good. The law is spiritual. But it is not able to get the flesh to walk in righteousness. The flesh is sold into sin. The flesh doesn't submit itself to the law of God. The sinful passions that are in the flesh get stirred up by the law. And rather than getting diminished sin, you get increased sin. The transgression increases. Sin becomes exceedingly sinful. That's in Romans 7. You have the flesh and the law together. In Romans chapter 8, you find not the law and the flesh. Rather, you find the flesh or the spirit. You don't find them together. You don't find them partnered with each other. The law trying to regulate the flesh. You don't find the spirit trying to regulate the flesh. You find the flesh and the spirit opposed to each other, excluding each other. You can have one or the other, but not both. The spirit isn't trying to regulate, isn't trying to direct the flesh. That the spirit within a person somehow designates that there's a new kind of person than the fleshly person. It's a spiritual person rather than a fleshly person. When Jesus is talking to Nicodemus, remember he tells Nicodemus that a person must be born again to even see the kingdom of heaven. The reason Jesus says one must be born again is that because what is born of the flesh is flesh, and what is born of the spirit is spirit. So in Romans 8, you find the flesh or the spirit. They're in opposition to each other. They exclude each other. It's one or the other. And the one who's born of the spirit is a different kind of person than the person who's born of the flesh. If you were reading through the Bible for the first time, you would notice a very strong connection between the Messiah, the Christ, and the Spirit. You would hear John the Baptist saying, "I baptize you with water, but after me comes one who is mightier than I. He's going to baptize you with the Holy Spirit." You would hear Jesus himself in this farewell discourse to his disciples saying, "I'm going to send you another helper. I'm going to send you the Comforter." And throughout the final discourse, chapters 14 to 16 in the Gospel of John, the phrase, "when the Spirit comes," is a recurring phrase. When the Spirit comes, this is what's going to happen. "I'm not going to leave you as orphans. I'm going to send somebody else. And when the Spirit comes, he's going to guide you into all the truth. He's going to recall the things that I have said to you." The resurrected Christ tells his disciples, "I want you to stay in Jerusalem. I'm sending you to make disciples of all nations, but I want you to stay in Jerusalem until you receive power." And then after his ascension on Pentecost, of course, there's the mighty rushing wind. A fulfillment of what prophets of old have said, that in the last days God will pour out his Spirit on all. And all Jesus' disciples are filled with the Spirit. And then they go forth in the power of the Spirit. The Spirit is the gift of the risen Christ to his own. So there's this strong connection between the Messiah and the Spirit. With that Spirit poured out, with that Spirit given now to the followers of Jesus, you find amazing, you find good things that are said about those now who have the Spirit, who have been filled with the Spirit. Here's just a few of the things found in Romans 8 alone about what's said about those who have the Spirit. The Spirit helps us in our weakness. It's a pretty cool thing. The law doesn't help you in your weakness. The law points out your weakness and condemns you for it. But the Spirit helps us in our weakness. If you know the passage, he intercedes for us according to the will of God. The mindset on the Spirit is life. Peace. Sounds pretty good. Set your mind on the Spirit and life and peace come. All who are being led by the Spirit, they're sons of God. To be led by the Spirit, that's all we need to know, and you're God's child.
One who raised Christ Jesus will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit. That probably has both a present implication and that the mortal body that you occupy right now, God, through his Spirit, will give you life. Of course, it's also centrally a promise that those who belong to Christ are going to be raised up like Christ to everlasting life through the Spirit. So some pretty good things. Some amazing things are said about these people who now have the Spirit given by the risen Christ. The Spirit is the gift that the Lord gives to make us his children. It's called the Spirit of adoption, you know, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. So it's the Spirit put within that makes us God's kids, gives us a relationship with him as a father. And it is the Spirit that can be set against the flesh. So here's a couple verses from Galatians. The flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. So there's that very final thing there. Here we're not dealing with the law trying to regulate the flesh. We're dealing with something else. Not under the law, but the Spirit. And the Spirit is in opposition to the flesh. They are opposed to each other. They have a different set of desires. If you satisfy the desires of the Spirit, you're not going to satisfy the desires of your flesh. If you satisfy the desires of their flesh, you're not going to satisfy the desires of the Spirit who is within you. The Spirit within brings an agenda that opposes the agenda of the flesh. The flesh has sinful passions, passions that aren't overcome even by the law. The Spirit has different passions in the flesh. The Spirit reveals things of God. The Spirit recalls things that Christ said and taught. The Spirit brings a person into the truth. The Spirit fears and honors the Lord. The Spirit shines light. The Spirit just has a different agenda than the flesh has. And they're in opposition to each other. Paul believes that the dispensation of the Spirit is able to get some things done which the dispensation of the law was not able to get done. Here's a couple of just very great verses. At the beginning of Romans 8, end of chapter 7, beginning of 8, that very much set the stage for what chapter 8 is going to talk about. What the law could not do. Weak as it was through the flesh. Law was partnered with the flesh, couldn't get some things done because of the nature of the flesh. But what the law could not do, God did. Sending his own son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and as an offering for sin, he condemned sin in the flesh, so that the requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. So there you get the opposition now of the flesh to the Spirit. And those who walk according to the Spirit can have the just requirement of the law fulfilled in them, something the law could not do. Now God has done through his Son and the giving of his Spirit. So the law regulating the flesh was not able to obtain righteousness. But what the law could not do, God did. Sent the Son, condemned sin in the flesh. And now those who have been justified by faith in Christ, they can walk not according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. And when they walk according to the Spirit, they can fulfill the righteous requirement of the law. So it would seem to be important. It would seem to be necessary to learn what it means to not walk according to the flesh. And it would seem important, it would seem necessary to learn what does it mean to walk according to the Spirit.
So how important is it to learn to walk that way, to not walk according to the flesh, to walk according to the Spirit? How necessary is that? Now back to those verses that we started with. Walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. It's like, this is the key. The law could not do it. God did it, sent his own Son. Now those who walk by the Spirit are going to fulfill the just requirement of the law. They're not going to fulfill the desires of the flesh. We solved it. Mission accomplished type of idea. If you live according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit, if you do the Spirit thing now, you are putting to death the deeds of the body, then you will live. So it seems very important. It seems very necessary. My flesh, your flesh, everybody's flesh, has within it no good thing. If I pursue the desires of the flesh, if you pursue the desires of your flesh, if you set your mind on your flesh, if you walk according to the flesh, you might, by the way, make a pretty impressive showing in the flesh. You might be able to do that. Probably you won't be as good as the Apostle Paul was in the flesh. I mean, Paul had a lot going for him in the flesh. He was a Hebrew of the Hebrews, tribe of Benjamin, circumcised the eighth day, Pharisee of the Pharisees, did his PhD under Gamaliel. He had a zeal that probably you can't rival. He had a zeal for God that I doubt you rival. So Paul had reason to boast in the flesh. But still, you might be able to make a pretty good showing in the flesh. Maybe you're Dutch. It's not quite as good as being a Hebrew, but it's a little bit of a benefit. Maybe you're smart. Maybe you're educated. Maybe you have some zeal. You might be able to make a pretty good showing in the flesh. However, if you walk according to the flesh, you won't please God. No one does. Paul didn't. But walk according to the Spirit, and you won't fulfill the desires of the flesh. By the Spirit, put to death the deeds of the body, put to death the deeds that the flesh wants you to do, you will live. So pretty cool things. If you walk by the Spirit, right? I hope I've convinced you of that. Just an excellent path if you live according to the Spirit. An awesome outcome will come to you if you do things by the Spirit. So we know that that Spirit stuff can yield just tremendous benefits, tremendous outcomes. But of course, we're often not so sure how to do it, right? Did you do anything by the Spirit last week? Were you led by the Spirit last week? Are you living according to the Spirit? I know it will work if I do it. I know I can get a good outcome if I walk that way. But how does one walk by the Spirit? You know, how do you live according to the Spirit? How does one do something by the Spirit? So I'm going to try to answer that. I'm going to try to answer it today very simply. And maybe we'll add some clutter next week. I want to begin by telling you something that walking by the Spirit is not. I don't think it best to think of the Spirit as a communication source. That the Spirit is kind of a spiritual Siri or a spiritual Alexa. Hey, Spirit, should I take the job? Hey, Spirit, is she the one for me? And so you yell out, hey, Spirit, and then the Spirit provides you with some information that you need to have. So that following the Spirit is seen as primarily a provider of needed information. So I want to say this carefully, because the Spirit can And the Spirit does provide us with information. The Spirit can say, I mean, I can tell you, I got some cool stories myself. The Spirit can say to you, go to the back of the store. There'll be a lady there in a blue dress. I want you to give her 1 Samuel 1, verse 17. You go to the back of the store. There's a lady in a blue dress. And you say, the Lord told me to give you 1 Samuel 1, verse 17. And she bursts into tears. Wow, that was cool. But I do want you to know that. So the Spirit can and does give us information. But walking by the Spirit is not about tapping into a communication source 24/7. That is not what walking by the Spirit is. I think it often gets portrayed that way. Our need is not primarily about information we don't have. The Spirit can give us. Do I get married? To whom? What should be my career path? Where should I go to school? How much money should I give to charity? All kinds of information that we need, all kinds of decisions that we make. And sometimes we portray being led by the Spirit like you're tapped into this communication source. And you can just yell out, hey, Spirit, and ask your question and get information that you need. Write the check for $24.76. Okay? Spirit told me to give $24.76. From small matters to really big matters. And of course, the really spiritual people, they don't put their socks on until they got leading from the Lord to what socks they are to wear. Other people choose their own socks, but ask the Lord about the big things. So I want to suggest to you that thought that being led by the Spirit, living according to the Spirit, means I've learned how to get tapped into this communication source. So I hear in my head or heart or wherever you hear it, the Spirit saying stuff, giving me information. Walking by the Spirit is not about communication. It is about transformation. Walking by the Spirit is not about a whisper in your ear that says, I want you to be patient right now. It's the best way to handle this issue. Walking by the Spirit is about the transformation of you into a patient person. That's what walking by the Spirit is about. Walking by the Spirit is not getting from the Spirit instructions about here is a suggestion for 4 kind things that you could do right now. Walking by the Spirit is about the transformation of you into a person who is kind. We all with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as from the Lord, the Spirit. Transformation is about the renewal of our mind. The Spirit teaches us to think about different things, that you have different interests and different pursuits. You don't simply run in the tracks that the world runs in. You're not conformed to this age, to this world. The Spirit has transformed your mind. So if you care about different things, you think about different things. Transformation involves a new set of interests, a new set of desires. With the Spirit within you, you say, I want to gain Christ. Fleshly person sat next to you, you want to what? I want to get rich. I want to be important. You want to gain Christ? You want to be found in Him? You want to know Him? Where'd you get those set of desires? Are you making that up? Just pretending? Do you really want that, or are you just saying that? Transformation is about a new set of interests, a new set of desires. Transformation is about having love poured out in your heart so that it's really there. Let me try to generate just one example of how by the Spirit you can put to death the deeds of the body. so that you will live. My flesh is selfish. My flesh is proud. My flesh is self-serving. My flesh puts Roger first. I might do it very discreetly, with lots of skill for the society, but my flesh puts Roger first. Your flesh puts you first. But the Spirit within me, that gift of the risen Christ, the Spirit within me, He really does make me love you. Makes my flesh nervous. That stuff that the Spirit puts within me. And my flesh goes, you love them, you start putting them first, you won't end up first. You put Roger first. You lay down your life for them, you might end up losing it. What do you think it means to lay down your life? You might lose it. You want to lose it for their sake? So my flesh gets really nervous about the things that the Spirit puts there. And I could, at that moment, walk according to the flesh and not according to the Spirit. I could indulge my pride. I could seek the selfish thing. You know, I could rationalize and justify why, in this case, Roger should go first. I'll call it love, but it'll just be a way to me achieve my own will and my own desire. So I could walk according to the flesh, but I really can do the thing that the Spirit has put within me. That's an amazing thing. I really can do that. I've learned that with you. I've learned that with people closest to me. I've learned that with Jan. There's times in my life where I stand there, I can do the selfish thing. She probably is not going to divorce me. If I do it too many times in a row, maybe she will. But she can endure quite a strain. Well, I can do the selfish thing, get away with it. But then I realize, you know what? I can also, because of the Spirit, I could do that stuff the Bible says about loving my wife and laying down my life for her. Really delight, actually, in doing that. I could do that. It's not like I don't have the resource. The dumb Spirit within me has given me that resource to love my wife. So I can do the thing, really do the thing that the Spirit's put within me. And so I do the Spirit thing rather than the flesh thing. So when the Spirit pours out love in your heart, you really can love. You can let the selfishness die. You cannot indulge the pride. You don't just have to try to deceive people into thinking you're putting them first when you're putting yourself first. You can walk by the Spirit, and you will not fulfill the desires of your flesh. It really works. So there's many more things that I could talk about, and maybe we'll come back and clutter it up a little bit. But I also just wanted to be simple and clear today. The Spirit of God within you. That song that we lingered on during worship really is an amazing song. That God would come to dwell by His Spirit in you. Why would He want such a house? I mean, heaven is His throne. Earth is His footstool. Where is the house that any of us could build for Him? Oh, you can have me. Big deal. Right? Oh, that the Lord would really think it's great that He could come dwell in me. It's like offering Him a little fake fish pond when He's got the Great Lakes already. Oh, we have things for the pond. But the reality of the Lord's love for us, that He would put His Spirit with all His light, with all His power, with all His truth, with all His glory. Put it in me. Put it in you. That's an amazing thing. So the Spirit of God, given to you by the risen Christ, A spirit can work powerfully within you.
Well, it's my style to make you say something to the person you're sitting next to. I'd make you turn right now and say to that person, you know what? Be careful. The spirit is working powerfully in me. Spirit of the living God. It's working mightily in me.
Not to convince the other person. I want you to convince yourself that it's so.
I want you to know that the spirit within you can change you. That's what I want you to know. That's what I want you to believe. The spirit within you can change you. Spirit within you can transform you from glory to glory until you are like him. And each one of us can live by the life that the spirit is producing and giving within. So the spirit within you can transform you. You can be led by him. You can walk according to the spirit. You can walk by the stuff that the spirit gives you. If you do, the desires of the flesh will go unfulfilled. And that thing that didn't get overcome, even by a righteous and holy law, will be overcome by the power and the working, the transformation of the spirit. Hope that stirs your heart in just the reality of God's grace to give to you his own spirit. And I want you to know it can change you. It can overcome all that fleshly stuff in you and in me. It is indeed a great salvation.